The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
This practice is often called insight meditation. This is the Insight Meditation Center. And the insight that is at the heart of this path is the process of coming to more deeply understand the nature of our direct experience. Understanding what it is that's actually happening here. This insight is what develops wisdom. And wisdom is the crux of this process of awakening. We develop many, many essential and supportive qualities along the way. Concentration, metta or kindness, patience, compassion, and yet it's wisdom that is the quality of mind that is what is ultimately responsible for or capable of actually uprooting the causes of stress and suffering. And so with insight, with the more deeply we understand and start to see the nature of experience, the nature of what's actually happening here, the more wisdom grows in our hearts. And this wisdom gives rise to a peace and freedom of non-clinging. Non-clinging that is in alignment with the understanding of the nature of things as they are. I'd like to read a few words from the Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi, a famous scholar, translator, practitioner, and teacher. He's an American monk ordained in the Sri Lankan tradition. He writes, "Whereas ignorance obscures the true nature of things, wisdom removes the veils of distortion, enabling us to see phenomena in their fundamental mode of being with the vivacity of direct perception. The training in wisdom centers on the development of insight, a deep and comprehensive seeing into the nature of existence, which fathoms the truth of our being in the only sphere where it is directly accessible to us, namely in our own experience. Normally, we are immersed in our experience, identified with it so completely that we do not comprehend it. We live it, but fail to understand its nature. Due to this blindness, experience comes to be misconstrued, worked upon by the delusions of permanence, pleasure, and self. Of these cognitive distortions, The most deeply grounded and resistant is the delusion of self. The idea that at the core of our being there exists a truly established I with which we are essentially identified. And so he's pointing to this process of deepening insight, deepening understanding into the nature of our direct experience. This is not so much a cosmological description of the nature of the world out there, but as Bhikkhu Bodhi pointed to, a realization of the nature of how it is that we experience the world, which is right here in our own experience. And that as the practice progresses towards a complete non-identification, as he pointed to, this seeing through and a releasing of this process of identifying with as I, me, and mine. One of the most powerful ways into supporting this process is cultivating the perception of impermanence. So again, another passage from Bhikkhu Bodhi says, as practice advances, one goes on noting each experience, letting it go and noting the next. The focus of attention shifts from the qualities of experiences to the process of experience itself. The process reveals a ceaseless flux of experiences arising and dissolving, succeeding one another without a halt. Within the process, there is nothing lasting. Experience itself is only a stream of events, occasions of feeling flashing into being moment by moment, dissolving as soon as they arise. Thus begins the insight into impermanence, which, as it evolves, overturns the three unwholesome roots of greed, aversion, and delusion. There is no greed for pleasant feelings. There is no aversion for painful feelings. And there is no delusion over neutral feelings. All are seen as merely fleeting and substanceless events, devoid of any true enjoyment or basis for involvement. So this can sound like a bit of a bleak assessment, like bad news, that there's nowhere to land in this world of changing experience. And yet, the more deeply we align with this truth, the more deeply we can cultivate this understanding and this direct perception of this truth in moment-to-moment experience, this opens the door to a peace and freedom that is beyond this process of trying to control and hold on to any of the changing experiences, which is where so much of our energy tends to go. You might just reflect for a moment on how much energy goes into trying to bring about some stability or security in this flux of changing experience, trying to find a place where we can build a home, so to speak, whether that's in material possessions or belongings or wealth or physical health or status or power or our roles or relationships. Buddha pointed to this process, this activity that he called samsara, this endless wandering on, endlessly looking for somewhere to rest, but never finding it, because we're looking in the wrong places. We're looking for somewhere to rest in that which is constantly changing, just constantly coming and going. The Buddha was pointing to this when he said, "The world trembles in all directions." You may have heard the story of the heavenly messengers, when the Buddha was said to have lived a very sheltered and privileged life and never really contacting illness or death or aging, until he went beyond the gates of the palace where he lived and encountered illness, aging, and death on the streets. And he had an insight and understanding that there's nothing in this realm of changing experience that can be a place of lasting refuge. And yet he was deeply inspired and committed to find a place of refuge, of security, to find a happiness that won't fall apart when the conditions of our bodies change or the conditions of the world change. In a sense, he was asking, where can we actually rest? And so his quest, his spiritual practice, was with this goal of a happiness, of a refuge, a resting place that lies beyond the reach of aging, illness, and death, lies that is not subject to coming and going. And this was the freedom that he ultimately discovered, and then pointed the way to it to all of us through his teachings that he offered for 45 years wandering, traveling around what's now northern India, sharing the Dhamma to all that were keen on awakening, all that had but little dust in their eyes. So there's a short set of verses in the Samyutta Nikaya that I really love, that also points to this. So someone named Uttara came and said to the Buddha, "Life is swept along. Next to nothing is its span. For one swept on by aging, no shelters exist. Perceiving this danger and death, One should do deeds of merit that bring about bliss. So they're offering this strategy to do deeds of merit that bring about bliss as a way to try to bring about happiness. The Buddha had a different conclusion. He responded, he repeated this verse back, except for the end. He says, life is swept along. Next to nothing is its span. For one swept on to old age, no shelters exist. Perceiving this danger in death, one should drop the world's bait and look for peace. So this radical move of turning away from the objects of desire, of craving, the seemingly alluring, pleasant experiences that all come and go. This is the world's bait. And the Buddha is saying, seeing this danger in the fact that everything is subject to falling away. Everything that arises is of the nature to cease. Perceiving this, one should drop the world's bait and look for peace. And that's exactly what he did. He could see that there's no stable resting place in this world of conditioned experience. Even these wholesome or blissful states that this questioner spoke of and came to the Buddha saying to cultivate bliss, that even these beautiful states that we do need to cultivate along the way, that they're supports for the path, they're not a final refuge. And in fact, when we are orienting to them with craving or wanting to take ownership or hold on to them, they just become more of the world's bait, in a sense, and more of a source of stress. There's a verse by Sister Upachala, one of the awakened nuns in the time of the Buddha, who shared a very pithy verse pointing to this. She said, the whole world is shaken. The whole world is trembling. The unshaken, the untrembling, of which run-of-the-mill people don't partake, where Mara has never been, that's where my heart truly delights. I'm talking about the delight in this unshaken, untrembling peace of freedom that comes about through no longer trying to hold on to anything in this world that is subject to change. And again, the way there involves more and more deeply and intimately seeing and comprehending and understanding the changing nature of experience, that the seeing that there is nowhere to land in these six senses, in this experience of body and mind. There's nothing we actually can cling to because it's so ephemeral. It's arising and passing. This understanding is what allows for the craving and clinging that underlies our suffering to be completely released, because we clearly understand the futility of that attempt to hold on, because we see how utterly ephemeral, arising and vanishing, all of our experience is. So this underlying delusion that there is some stability or permanence in the objects that we're trying to hold on to, this gets deeply shaken and eventually completely uprooted through this process of repeatedly seeing impermanence arising and passing in direct experience. As this, the process is as this perception of impermanence, of instability or corelessness, as this grows, this gives rise to an experience of disenchantment, where the allure of the objects of craving and clinging starts to fall away. We start to see there's nothing lasting there. So the allure starts to fall away. And this starts to give rise to the possibility of craving and clinging no longer actually arising at all. And this is the opening to freedom. This is the gateway to this ultimate refuge, this security from bondage that the Buddha called Nibbana, or the deathless, that which is not subject to arising and passing, not subject to birth and death. So I'll end with a quote from the Dhammapada. The Buddha says, "Fully knowing the arising and passing of experience, one attains joy and delight. For those who see this, this is the deathless." So much more to say on this topic of impermanence, and also the other aspects of insight, the understanding the nature of stress and selflessness, or not self. And I look forward to continuing exploring this topic with you. I'll be on retreat for the next 2 weeks. So Liz Powell will be here. And then I look forward to picking this back up with you in a few weeks from now. So thank you all very much for your practice and presence. And I'll do a brief dedication of merit, and then we'll end. And then if there are any questions, I'm sorry I didn't end early enough for questions, but if there are any, I'm happy to stick around after the end to chat. May the goodness of our practice and our coming together, may that ripple out and be of benefit to all beings everywhere. May all beings, without exception, be free. Thank you all very much. Take care.